Welcome to Inside Ag. I'm Greg Deering. Today I'm joined by KFB annual meeting keynote speaker Diane Sullivan, who's here to give us a little preview of what attendees will hear in Manhattan on December 8th. Diane, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Greg. It's a pleasure to be here with you today.
Just to get us started a little bit, can you give us a short introduction? I know you've got a wealth of experience and knowledge, but a little bit of background about yourself for our listeners.
Yeah, happy to. Thank you. So I am Diane Sullivan. I am a mother of six amazing young adults and grandmother of four incredible grandsons. And as a young family, we experienced homelessness here in my home state of Massachusetts, which drove me into direct service, helping others like me to avoid homelessness. And this eventually led me into policy work. And so in 2016, while I was working two jobs, one in policy and one in the food industry, still struggling to make ends meet, I was approached by Brian Klippenstein, formerly of Protect the Harvest, to engage in opposing a ballot question that voters in my state would be faced with that year. And like Prop 12 in California that a lot of people are familiar with, that year's question three in Massachusetts would ultimately ban the production and sale of safe, affordable eggs and pork in my state. So I see that as another situation where those with money and satisfied choices want to tell low-income people what to eat and dictate to farmers how they farm, which to me is a recipe for disaster.
So what are the insights that you can take away from both your experience and your professional experience in the policy world, especially at you're a co-founder of Equitable Spaces. What have you learned from starting that up, and what insights can you share?
Good. Thank you for that question. That 2016 campaign and the work that followed really provided me with an opportunity to connect with so many wonderful farmers and ranchers across the country, learning more about agriculture, and on a parallel path, connecting with anti-hunger advocates on a national level. And in 2020, just days before the world shut down due to the pandemic, I met my co-founder at Equitable Spaces, Jamika Mills, at the National Anti-Hunger Policy Conference in DC. And since then, we've been building a platform for individuals like us with lived experience in poverty and related issues like hunger and homelessness, those who are and have historically been positioned furthest from the rooms where decisions are being made that directly and often dramatically impact our lives, and helping folks to really engage in shaping policies that actually work rather than harm. So to really sum it up, I've learned that food policy can be harmful, whether or not that's intentional. And those who don't have a voice in the debate are often those who are most harmed. So in other words, if you're not at the table, you're likely on the menu. And I've learned that while threats to, the federal government's nutrition programs like SNAP and free school meals, they still persist, threats to agriculture are equally important for all of us to really understand and engage in, particularly those that are already struggling to feed themselves and their loved ones. And of course, those for whom agriculture is their chosen field. I know that SNAP participation does not always represent the full scope of the problems in Kansas. And when I say SNAP, I'm talking about the federal government Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in December. But, currently there's about 189,000 Kansans participating in the SNAP program. But according to Feeding America, about 384 people in Kansas are facing hunger. Now that's 1 in 8 people and 1 in 5 children. And I know from my own personal experience that you could be working two jobs participating in the SNAP program and still go hungry. And so when I started to really engage in this question three debate, in learning so much more, I started to see this similarity between people with lived experience and farmers and ranchers. And that was really related to our narratives. And what I found was that when we're not stepping into the space, sharing about ourselves, there are others. And in Massachusetts, it was the Humane Society of the United States in 2016 that was painting a very awful picture of farmers and ranchers, and one that I was learning to be very untrue. And then I've learned that it's not just the question threes, it's not just the Prop 12s, it's bigger than that. It's crop subsidies. It's pesticide standards and other chemical use. And I found that the impact, right, and that harm, as we increase the cost of food, so often it lands on people with lived experience. So I found that it was necessary for me to share my story of poverty, hunger, and homelessness, not because it's easy to do, but what I do and what we encourage folks in equitable spaces to do is to, share your story to impact public policy, really leveraging our lived experience as an expertise in this space to really inform sound public policy.
Right. And you mentioned the connection between farmers and those facing poverty, food, hunger, those issues. Seems like that would be an obvious, those would be obvious allies, but maybe not quite so much. From your experience, though, if you could wave a magic wand and radically change food policy in the United States overnight, what are some of those top issues that you would like to hit?
Well, it's interesting because the policy challenges are many and they're diverse and they seem to be coming from all directions. So, just to highlight one that I think should be on folks' radar is preserving choice in the SNAP program. So, let's put aside any biases we might have about the program or about the people who access it and really strip it down to its basics. This is a program that allows individuals the ability to step into a grocery store. And to help them just meet their basic needs. And currently, individuals have the freedom of choice when shopping with their SNAP benefits. But, and what that means, if somebody wants to purchase a pack of meat, an ear of corn, fresh or frozen produce, a block of cheese, as long as they have SNAP benefits available to them, they can make those purchases. And yes, even soda. And what we do know the data shows is that people on a quote unquote SNAP diet eat very similarly, are making very similar choices, just they can't afford to really feed themselves throughout the month. So there's been a lot of discussion and efforts from both sides of the aisle in DC to remove choice from the SNAP program, which, in my opinion, from what I know, is a very expensive and an ineffective approach to health disparities in this country. And so what I plan to do in Kansas, I'll be sharing a photo that I took recently at a congressional briefing that took place in DC focused on SNAP choice that was hosted by the National Grocers Association and Feeding America. So again, these, two, really different missions in what it is that they're doing, but share a common interest. And they pulled together a table display that was very effective. And it was, put together to show staffers in DC the types of food that this year alone, Congress has proposed removing from the SNAP program. And we're talking about like peanut butter and jelly sandwiches in a child's lunch box, juice, granola bars, graham crackers, even ground beef, shredded cheese. The list just goes on, things that you and I likely consume on a very regular basis. And I'll plan to explain what I heard that day and what I know, what the impact is on shoppers would be. But we also heard from, a retailer and a food bank representative. Actually, that day in DC, it was somebody from Kansas who was there to speak to Congress on the issue. So it's interesting to from my perspective to understand that this is not just an attempt to control the diets of low-income people. This is going to impact all of us. Those costs will be passed on to all of us as consumers, just as we saw happen for question three in Massachusetts. Just as we saw Prop 12 in California and any other, regulation that seeks to increase the cost of our food.
And you mentioned Brian already, but he will be on stage with you here coming up in December. What kind of conversation are you projecting to have with Brian? He was unable to join us today, but will this be kind of a back and forth? Are you in agreement on most things? How will that go?
I am absolutely thrilled to be joining Brian in Manhattan for what is actually my first in-person speaking engagement with an agriculture group that I've had in a very long time, maybe even since prior to the pandemic. So I'm extremely excited. I'll plan to share a bit more about myself, my work, and my ideas around how we address the root causes of hunger in America. And I can't speak to what his specific message will be that day. But what I do hope is that Brian and I, what we'll be able to do is to demonstrate what it looks like when we can take a very meaningful and critical step towards real solutions in the food policy space. Because what I see now more than ever is that we need a coalition of forces, one that is willing and prepared to engage the masses on the real threats to American agriculture and how that plays out for the, 40 plus million people that are participating in the SNAP program, but also how that trickles out to the rest of us. So I'll plan to share, some of the concerns that I'm hearing from anti-hunger and SNAP advocates. I just returned from a convening in Memphis of about 100 advocates from 44 states who are fighting for food and income security. And as I said, the challenges are diverse. The threats to SNAP are real and they are many. But, it's not just our nutrition programs, as your audience knows all too well. It's regulation after regulation that makes it harder and harder for farmers and ranchers to produce. But I think that what Brian and I bring to the space is to really show how two seemingly opposite ends of, any political spectrum that we might conjure up in our minds can really meet in a place where we can agree at least on one thing, right? And that's that here in this country, where we have the most abundant agriculture system in the world, that nobody should go hungry. And while it takes time and growing pains, Brian and I, we've had this ongoing relationship and friendship, really, he's a dear friend of mine at this point, going back almost a decade, that we can build meaningful and genuine relationships when we're transparent. And sometimes it takes a little bit of vulnerability. So I hope that we give permission to others to first connect with their own humanity, and then to really think about strategically how together we can build relationships, we can build trust, and from that solid foundation, really identify and implement real solutions that address these ongoing threats, both in the short term and certainly in the long term, those threats that are faced by agriculture and those that you work so hard to feed every day. So we're at, in my opinion, a real crossroads. How we move from here will determine whether or not we are successful at building the coalition necessary to bring about policies that work, that allow your members to produce and allows my community to eat, or tragically, whether we fail. So as we consider what it costs for all of us to engage in these debates, and who or what we're fighting for, with, or against, we have to consider the cost of what would it cost us if we do not engage? So I'm here, I'm ready to engage, excited to really put on display what Brian and I have been able to create together and independently in our own rights and our own work, and looking forward to meeting some of the great folks in Kansas.
We are excited to have you, and it sounds like it will be a great discussion on the main stage there. So is there anything else before we go here that you'd like to share with our audience today?
Yeah, I just think, be mindful. Let's get creative and let's really think about what it's going to take for us to build the relationships, build the trust, and build the coalition that this work requires.
Diane Sullivan, the keynote speaker for Kansas Farm Bureau's annual meeting on Sunday, December 8th in Manhattan. Diane, thanks for coming on the show today.
Thank you, Greg. Look forward to seeing you soon.
If you've enjoyed the podcast, please give it a like and share with others. I'm Greg Deering, and this has been Inside Ag from Kansas Farm Bureau, the voice of agriculture.